Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison, and today we have our very own passionate educator on her new learning journey, Rachel Puff, with us today. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to see you. How are you doing?
I'm really well. I'm so excited to see you too. It's been a long time, and every time I get a chance to chat with you, it's always a good time. So I'm really glad to be here. This is really exciting. And congratulations, by the way, on the podcast. It's just phenomenal.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been so much fun. It has been a work of love and appreciation, and I'm so excited that's resonating with people, because you do all these things, and you get on the Twitter and you do your work and you share your work, but you never know if it's going to like click with somebody. So it's obvious that Recess Duty is clicking with people, and so thank you all of our listeners out there. So Rachel, for those of us who don't know the fabulous that is Rachel Puff, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
About 20 years, I think, into my career as an educator, I've been fortunate enough that I've worked in PYP schools for almost all of it. I've done everything from being a single subject teacher to PYP coordinator to principal. I'm an IBAN. I love doing workshops. I love collaborating with people from all over the world. And I've recently just started my own consultancy business. So that's kind of exciting. And I have like my first client. So that's a lot of fun. And it's another kind of journey that I'm on. And I'm back in Canada after 20 years overseas. Mm-hmm. And I'm working in public education for the first time in a very long time. So it's been very interesting.
For our listeners out there, I met you at a workshop here at Chadwick.
Yes.
And then we have stayed in touch through Twitter and social media. And I also think, like, didn't you go to China and do a workshop at my previous school?
I did.
Yeah. And so it's just such a small world out there.
It is. When you really look at it, the whole international teaching community is so small. I just did one of the online IB workshops that are just strictly, I never know how to explain these to people. They're not the online virtual workshops. They're just the online workshops that last for a month.
So like the asynchronous ones.
Yes. So I said to the people on the workshop, you know, now you're officially, you know, PYP educators, you're going to see how small this community is. You will see each other's names passing across your screen or articles or on Twitter or whatever it is that you're doing. And you'll really notice how small this community is, which is sometimes a really good thing and sometimes maybe not a good thing, but it is what it is.
And that is so true for almost everything in all the fields. You know, I have a friend who's in a real estate thing in Kansas City, and he said, you know, I thought this was such a massive community. And when I got into it, he realized, oh, whoa, I've been working with the same people in different real estate agencies for now 10 years, and they're the same people. So it really is when you finally get into your niche, into your career, you do find, even though you and I are like 8,000 miles away or something, it is very, we still stay in touch, and it's still very small. That saying, what is it? Like 7 degrees of separation can connect the whole world.
Absolutely. And you know, we don't talk too often, but whenever we do, it's like snap, right back to where we left off. It feels like no time has passed at all, you know, just it's great. And there, I've got people that I've done workshops with 8 years ago that, you know, I still connect with and have the luxury of chatting with them due to technology. We can have those chats, and it's really nice.
It is such a great feeling to be able to connect with a colleague that you haven't talked to for a while and feel like no time has passed. Right. And that is something I'm so lucky are so happy that Zoom and Google and Twitter have allowed us.
Right. And you and I were just talking about this before we went live, is that the Toddle International Educator Summit is on now. And I was facilitating a group today about a primary job alike. Mm-hmm. And it was so obvious how much people missed connecting with other educators. It was just a really nice feeling to be able to have those professional conversations, maybe with people outside of your school, so that it's, you know, fresh ideas, fresh eyes, fresh ears. And it was just a really great feeling. And I think technology in that aspect has just, I think, how would we have gotten through this pandemic without it? Really? What would we have done? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, from where I grew up, we did not have one-on-one iPads. We did not have technology use. And I know for a fact that I knew colleagues in Kansas that were printing out reams of paper of worksheets to send to children, because what else are they going to do? There was none of this. And that is one thing that the pandemic did, was I think of it as a great equalizer, is it showed the gaps of what different resources and different abilities of, you know, this system that we were in was able to give to kids.
Which leads us perfectly into why we're here together today, to talk about the little learning journey that I find myself on.
That's right. Rachel, you did tell me about your new learning journey, and I wanted to get your perspective on it. So tell us a little bit about what you've been working on this year in your new current situation.
Well, one of the things that I've really been working on, and I think I've been working on it for a lot longer than I really knew that I had been, and I've just come to some realizations, is that I'm trying to become an anti-racist. And it's been quite the journey, and it's mm-hmm. been a very humbling experience for me, as I realize how many times in my past that I let my privilege sort of speak for me, or create the ideas about sort of the world that I'm living in and working in. So I've sort of gone on this, I'm working at a school with a very high Indigenous population. That's one of the reasons I think this is, that I'm on this journey. But I think also the Black Lives Matter movement really struck a chord with me in ways that I wasn't necessarily proud of. And anybody who knows me would think, oh, Rachel's really open-minded, and she's not prejudiced, and she's not this, she's not that. And I'm not, but didn't realize how much I had to learn, Levi. I've been astounded by the amount of learning that I've needed to do. And that's where I'm at. I'm doing a lot of professional reading. I'm doing a lot of reflection about who I am and how I became this person. And, you know, as a Canadian, we sort of have for many years lived in that comfortable space of, there's no racism here. But look at our neighbors and slavery and how people of color, Black people are treated in the United States. That's not us. We're not those people. And then the uncovering of all of these bodies on residential schools started happening last year. And I think it was a real eye-opener for people. And then that started me thinking, the last residential school closed while I was in high school, mm-hmm. and I knew nothing about it. How could I have been living in this parallel universe where I knew nothing about these residential schools while I was going to school myself? It wasn't part of history. So I started doing a lot of reading about Canadian history, how Canadian history is depicted in history books, who writes it, which voices are being excluded. And I think back to when I did my master's degree at the University of Ottawa, I had this wonderful professor by the name of Nicholas Ingefuk, and he was very much, his courses were about curriculum of place. And when this whole thing sort of, here I am, I'm sitting in a very, I'm in an uncomfortable place trying to find the correct words to use, because I don't want it to be masked by my sort of whiteness, talking about curriculum of place. And I went back and thought about this, and I thought, how do you find who you are if you have no place? Mm. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, of course.
Like for the Native, Indigenous, Métis, Inuit people in Canada, like there is no place. We took it. we took it. So how do you make those connections to who you are and how you function in society when the very foundational things that people need were taken away from you? So, you know, we took their land, we took their language, we took their culture, we took all of these things. So I started reading some books about sort of Canadian history and what it's like. And the work of Timothy Stanley and Ken Osborne talking about the sort of the grand Canadian narrative and who wrote it. It was very confronting because I like to think of myself as, I said, that open-minded person who's eager to embrace other people, other cultures. And I thought, well, yeah, this is the narrative that I was given all through school, through elementary school, through high school. This was the narrative that I was given. And now, as a teacher, I have the one power, but also the responsibility to rewrite that narrative for my students. It's not the history of our country. It's the history of white men who were in power at the time. And we need to make space for all of those other voices to be able to share their experiences and their history with us. So that's sort of where I am right now, is I'm trying to work through all of this. And I will tell you, I have felt really uncomfortable for quite a while now. I'm worried about, am I going to say the wrong thing? Am I going to say something that offends somebody? Am I going to pronounce something incorrectly that's going to upset somebody? And I thought, you know what? Be prepared to be told to be quiet. Be prepared to be told to listen. And one of the hardest things as a teacher, but also somebody that's, you know, pretty outgoing, is I have to decenter myself from the conversation. It's not about me. It's just not about me. So be quiet, stop talking, and listen and learn. And nobody's saying that from a place of malice or hostility. They're saying it from a place of reality. Like, it's your turn to listen. And I accept that. It's been a challenge. It's been, I've felt very uncomfortable about a lot of things, but I figure if young people of color can be subjected to blatant racism, we as white people can feel uncomfortable.
And it goes back to the saying, it's like, you know, it's not our place to tell someone how they feel. It's not our place to tell them where they should be or who they should be or how they should feel. It's our place to be like, you know what? I don't know. Let me get back to you. You know, tell me your story. What is your story? What is your perspective? Because I don't have your perspective, nor will I ever have your perspective. You know, I loved what you were talking about when you mentioned about who is writing these books. So much more thought I'm finding, talking to multiple educators around the world, is given to who is writing these textbooks that we're putting in front of these kids. Who is publishing them? What is their narrative? What is their story? How do we make sure that we are giving a very broad and open narrative that is everyone's voice? Because, like, even from my small town American voice versus the individual in Dallas or Chicago is going to be very different, but we Absolutely. Get the same narrative. We get the same textbooks from different companies that may or may not be our narrative. So how do we make sure that we're, like you said, listening, honoring, being prepared for those uncomfortable conversations, when in reality, we do need those. We do need those because that's how we're going to learn and how to get better and grow.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, teachers now, I think, and I'm proud of a lot of educators out there, are making sure that their classroom libraries and materials reflect the reality of the world around them, and that their diverse picture books and bringing in different voices into conversations and looking at things from multiple perspectives, which I think is really important. I'm very lucky as a straight white female. I don't have a lot of things that I need to deal with in the everyday world that are a real challenge to me. Yes, I come up against misogyny and things like that, but my experience in the world is very different from, let's say, a non-binary Black person, someone who, you know, identifies as they, them, is Black, their reality is very different than mine. Or a Native Two-Spirit person, very different reality than mine. And we have to try to make sure that those experiences are in our classroom, that we talk about those things. It's a difficult time. We're looking at bills being passed across the states where you can't say gay and you've got to report trans kids and all these sorts of things. And I just think we have so many bigger problems to deal with than these things. You know, can we not just treat everybody like human beings and see who they are and respect them for their stories, their challenges, their realities? And be able to say to somebody, I don't understand where you've come from, but I'm respecting the fact that I don't understand where you come from, and I'm ready to learn. And I also know that it's not your responsibility to teach me. Mm-hmm. I need to take on some of that learning myself. So that's what I'm doing.
And I love that you know that word responsibility is... It comes up in a lot of conversations about owning our own learning, about taking responsibility for our own gaps in our own learning. And we all have them. We truly do. And so tell us about some of the books. You've mentioned books a couple of times. Tell us some of the books that you're reading right now that you would recommend for people who are wanting to go through this journey with you to help them understand other people's perspective, understand different minority groups.
Not even books. A lot of the things that I'm reading are like scholarly journals. So because then I know they've been vetted. So I've been reading a lot of bell hooks, of course, because she was absolutely incredible. I've been reading, you know, Ken Osborne, Desmond Morton, this one fellow, and I'm going to get his name wrong because I've never heard his name spoken. His name is Peter, and his last name is Seixas. And he's written this absolutely brilliant article about what is historical consciousness and what is public memory. And it very much kind of speaks to the removal of these Confederate statues throughout the state. I mean, it goes hand in hand that this is what we're dealing with, but we're dealing with it in Canada as well, right? Like, mm-hmm. Where are the Indigenous statues? Where are the, there aren't any, you know, there really aren't. So where are they? And without those, how does that create that sort of public memory of the spaces that we find ourselves in if a whole part of our real story is not there?
And then how do we find that real story?
Find that real story?
And because again, going back to responsibility, yeah. It's our responsibility to go out and find it, not for somebody to come and give it to us.
No. And one of the things, I've been doing some work with Toddle, and I have to give this person a shout out on here, is I've been working on this program of inquiry project. And I have to give a shout out to Cindy Blackburn, because I've been working on three units, and I've really sort of gone in a huge part of this journey that I'm on into these units that I've created. And I think in my 20 years of teaching, it's probably the best work that I've done. I'm really proud of it. I'm really passionate about it. And thanks to Cindy and Toddle, there was no pushback on it at all. You know, some of it is controversial, mm-hmm. And I understand that. But, you know, I did a unit about how our beliefs and values sort of help create our identity. And I talked about the Black Lives Matter movement. I talked about LGBTQTIA+. I talked about residential schools. I talked about all of these things, encouraged to do it. Mm-hmm. Which was just really, it was really reaffirming for me, because a lot of the time I feel very sort of unsteady on my feet right now, because I'm not exactly sure of where I fit. And I've got to find the place that I fit, that I feel really comfortable in. And that's my goal, is to get to a place where I feel comfortable enough to engage in anti-racist conversations where I have a voice. I have an educated voice, but I also know when it's my turn to stop talking.
And that goes into so much of what I've been working on lately is cognitive coaching about learning to win, just to pause and to let someone finish their thought and to not jump right in, to just let them take a moment and continue talking. And that has made me such a better teacher, educator, friend, colleague, son, brother, of just taking a breath. We have time. If we don't finish this conversation, we can have another one. And that's where I always find is just like, I'm a very exciting person and I want to get things done very quickly. But in these types of conversations, it's very important to really take your time and to really, again, be responsible with the fact that you don't know everything. We can't know everything. How can we be better for our students who aren't like us, who don't look like us, who don't come from where you come from? And how do we value them? How do we make sure that they're valued? How do we make sure that they're a part of the community? And that is something that I applaud you for. And thank you so much for coming on Recess Duty. And I'm very thrilled to know you, Rachel. And thank you so much for coming and being vulnerable with us here today.
Thank you. I think it's, you know, it's an important conversation to have. You know, to be honest, I'm a little bit embarrassed that I'm just sort of finding out and discovering these things at my age. And that's also part of this is why did I get so caught up in my own privilege, I guess, that did I fail to see it or did I not want to see it? All those sorts of things. So my goal and my challenge to other educators out there is like, who are you teaching? And do you know them? And are you aware of their histories and that whole idea of intergenerational trauma and things that so many of our students are dealing with? And have you created a safe space that recognizes who these students are? It's very personal. It's very, as I said, it's been a very humbling experience for me. And it's been a really meaningful learning journey that I think is going to take the rest of my life, but I'm going to make sure that it's incorporated into my teaching practice at every turn so that every voice is heard and that every voice matters.
And isn't that our number one goal in inquiry, EYP, inclusive, accepting classroom in the 21st century is to value all voices, big and small, from every walk of life? I love that little sentence you said. Thank you so much. So Rachel, where can people find you if they want to continue this conversation with you and to join you on this journey?
I am on Twitter at TTRPOF. I have to admit, I haven't been on there as much as I used to be. I used to be very active and then I've kind of become so wrapped up in this that I'm doing a lot of my reading and work. I am on Twitter, just not as active as I used to be.
Thank you so much. And all of those links will be in the show notes down below, everyone, so we can connect with Rachel, continue our learning of empowering voices, big and small. What is it, Rachel, that you remember about recess growing up?
Oh my goodness, Levi. The school that I went to, and I don't know why, I could ask somebody, but we had a separate boys' entrance and girls' entrance. So we had like segregated recess. The boys were on one side of the school and the girls were on one side of the school. So we would play a lot of soccer in the snow. And we would play sometimes in the winter, we had a skating rink and we'd play broom ball. But the real fun recess thing was to sneak back into the big field where you could sort of see the boys and the girls could mix and mingle with each other. So it usually turned into like a big game of tag, or probably more accurately, a big game of like, ooh, you've got cooties, and running away from each other and then making it back to the safety of your side of the school where they couldn't venture. But recess was always a highlight of the day. I loved it. We had 2 15-minute recesses a day, and I just absolutely adored my recess. I love the name of your podcast. I just think it's such a great, great name.
Thank you. It really was just a idea that I had on recess duty when I was watching kids have just a blast. I was having a great time talking with my colleagues on recess duty. We talk about that collaboration earlier about collaboration in micro sessions, and it was just amazing. So thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks for having me, Levi. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I am Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Thanks everybody, for listening.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our recess duty.